everyone. Welcome to City Bible Forum. We'll get underway. We're looking at the resurrection over the next few weeks. Last week we kicked off with Rory and Marcus talking about what happens when we die. This week we're looking at the strange hope. Christians for 2,000 years have been proclaiming the resurrection as the hope for the future. But it's not a word that gets used in everyday language, is it? And I remember teaching at Sunday school about the resurrection of Jesus, and one of the kids, who would have been about 5 or 6, just had this puzzled look on his face when we were using this word that he didn't understand. So he explained that it was when someone dies and then comes back to life. And he grappled with this concept for a couple of moments, and then it hit him, but he didn't suddenly have a blinding flash of light in getting it. He was suddenly just completely bamboozled that anyone would believe that dead people could come back to life. I think his parents had been telling him that that's what happened to Jesus, but I don't think the penny had ever dropped. And certainly his experience of death would have been dead things stay dead. So he was deeply puzzled the more he understood what the Christian claim was. Where did this idea come from? It's not our everyday experience. Today we'll be looking at this strange hope, and Rory will be discussing with us where the idea came from. The passage that we'll look at from the Bible is Acts chapter 17. If you open up your handouts to page 2 there on the left, you'll see Acts chapter 17, where this hope of resurrection is proclaimed. While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "What's this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Well, I'll hand over to Rory.
Well, very kind of you to take 20 minutes out of your lunchtime to come and consider these things with us. We're glad that you can. Give me 1 second to find my talk, and away we go. Our friends that live next door have just moved house, and we've been involved in that task of helping people to move and looking after kids while things are moved and so on. It's one of the grim realities of modern life, I think, the task of moving. I think we were actually commiserating with this friend about friends in oil and gas who have to move every 12 or 18 months and so on, and how traumatic that must be. My wife and I have moved a few times. We've moved, I think, 6 times in 11 years. And as perhaps some of you have done, each time we've moved, we've never quite unpacked all the boxes that we had packed up. And there was a point once, actually, which finished last year, where there was one box that my wife and I had moved 7 times without having ever opened it at a house that we had ever lived in. And to look at this box, it was kind of about this tall and all done with tape and so on, we would often ask ourselves, could we not just get rid of this thing? Because clearly, on a day-to-day level, we don't need it. Whatever is in there, it wasn't clearly marked, but whatever is in there for 7 or 8 years or 7 or 8 moves, we've been just fine without it. And yet we didn't. We kept it. Eventually we opened it and there were some good things in there, and we were glad that we did. And I talk about that box because over the next 6 weeks, as we think about the resurrection, I think that for the Christian faith, the resurrection is like that box. It's something that Christians know they possess. They carry with them in their Bibles and their creeds and their songs. They know that the resurrection is something that is part of who they are and where they go and what they do. And you know, I think like that box, the actual teaching on the resurrection, what the resurrection means, is rarely opened and investigated. And in fact, I think, the truth be told, most Christians go through life like we went through life with that box, without ever opening it or feeling the need to open it. Somehow we just are able to get on without it. But my hope actually is over these next 6 or 7 weeks, as we investigate the Bible's strange claims about the resurrection, that having opened that box and seen what's inside, I hope that we'd go away thinking, How did we ever live without it? How did we ever cope or hope without understanding those things? The resurrection is a strange and confusing claim, and it was for Paul in Athens. You see in those verses there that are on your outline in sentence number 6, Paul hears the words that no public speaker ever wants to hear. What is this babbler trying to say? Paul's in the marketplace, and to be fair to Paul, you know, in the marketplace where you hear the kind of the crazy preacher, it is hard to hear what the person is trying to say. So maybe it wasn't his public speaking skills, but the sheer hustle and bustle of a Greco-Roman marketplace. You can hear in the story there that Paul was in Athens, not on a preaching tour actually, but doing a bit of rest and waiting for his friend to arrive. But in Athens, Paul was distressed by all the idols. Paul, a Christian Jewish man, sees the idols and can't help but speak up against them. So he goes and debates in the marketplace, and they say, "What is this babbler trying to say?" As I say, probably as well as not understanding him, they just couldn't hear, as in the bustle, hustle and bustle of the marketplace. Someone says, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." You see that in sentence 7. He seems to be advocating foreign gods. Now, why would you think that the Apostle Paul, or why would anyone think that the Apostle Paul was advocating foreign gods? Well, it's hard to see in our English Bibles, but notice the explanation. They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. They said this. They said he's advocating foreign gods because he was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. And almost certainly what's happened here is that as they heard Paul speaking, they heard two words in Greek, the word Jesus and the word Anastasis. And as they heard him speak, he spoke about Jesus and Anastasis. Jesus, Anastasis. Jesus, Anastasis. Jesus, as you may hear in the word, is the Greek rendering of the name Jesus. And Anastasis is the Greek word for resurrection. And as Paul was in the marketplace, people heard him again and again say, Jesus Anastasis, and thought that he was advocating foreign gods, a god called Jesus, and perhaps a female god called Anastasis. But of course, he was doing nothing of the sort. He was advocating Jesus and, notice, the resurrection. Not necessarily Jesus and his resurrection, but Jesus and in him the hope of resurrection. What Paul was saying was confusing enough, but yet interesting enough for him to get an invitation to Mars Hill, to the Areopagus, to the great centre of learning in the great city of Athens. And Paul stands up in this passage in the Bible and gives a speech to the people of Athens. And it's an extraordinary speech, and it comes out of his experience. And he says that to the people of Athens that there is a creator God who made the earth and all that is in it. And he follows the logic of the Jewish faith. That is, if there is a God in heaven who made us and who made all created things, then we should not worship idols. It is the classic Jewish point of view, which we heard last week from the rabbi. That there's a creator God that made these things, therefore do not worship the things that he has made, but render your worship to the creator God. Everything Paul says so far on the Areopagus on Mars Hill could have been said by Isaiah or Ezekiel or any of the prophets of the Old Testament. But at the end of the talk, he says something very distinctive. He says that God will come one day to judge the world, completely Jewish. He has indicated this to all men by raising Jesus from the dead, distinctively Christian. And there, as I think, as we map out the territory for the next few weeks, that's really at the heart of it. A creator God who has made all things, who calls for our loyalty and our worship, which is the story of the Old Testament, and the resurrection of Jesus, the surprising and unexpected turn of events that are reported in the New Testament. Now, again, to think about Paul, the public speaker, on a kind of Billy Graham scenario, Paul doesn't do that well on Mars Hill. At the end of the talk, he says he's given proof of this to everyone by raising Jesus from the dead, and the talk kind of crashes and burns. It says in the Bible that people sneered at him, and most people ignored him when they finally worked out what he was talking about, because it was so unbelievable that someone would be raised from their dead in their body. But we're also told that a small group, a small minority of those that heard Paul, did want to hear more from him, and an even smaller group believed. It was a hard sell for the Apostle Paul, because Paul was speaking to Greeks whose whole religious life was shaped around a kind of fear of the body. For the Greek worldview, for the ancient Greek philosophies and so on, redemption, when it was talked about, was to be redeemed from the body. It was to escape bodily life. It was to escape this world in all its physicality and enter into some kind of spiritual world. But Paul advocated not rescue from the body, but the resurrection of the body. Not rescue from the creation, but the redemption of the creation. And that, I think, is a strange view. It was strange then, and it is strange now. In fact, I think actually, whether Christian or non-Christian, to know what to do with the resurrection is hard for many of us. I mean, if you are a Christian, for example, what does the resurrection mean? If it's in that box and you pull it out, what is it for? And answers include that it validates the cross, that it's God's tick on the cross, which is probably true. But in that sense, then, the resurrection is not about itself. It's really about what happened before it. And you sometimes hear that the resurrection proves that Jesus is God. And again, maybe it does that in some sense, but it's not obvious how someone who is raised from the dead, that you would draw the conclusion that they are God. And in fact, mostly when it's talked about in the Bible, it says that God raised Jesus, not that Jesus is God by virtue of his resurrection, but that God did something to him and for him. You could say it proves that there's life after death, that Jesus maybe went to heaven and came back and reported on that. But again, that's not really how the Bible speaks. The Bible is almost totally silent on the 3 days that Jesus was in his tomb. And he comes back not so much to report on heaven, but to report on something quite different. Over the next few weeks, I want to argue that the resurrection, far from just being a tick to the cross, far from just being proof that Jesus is God or that there is life after death, is actually at the very heart of the Christian message, of the Christian gospel. You see, if you go through the New Testament and you did a word search and Googled the word gospel, the word evangel, you find that in almost every time the gospel is explained and pronounced, the resurrection is explained or pronounced. In fact, that is true literally in every time that the gospel is preached in the book of Acts. The emphasis, the declaration, the message is that Christ has been raised from the dead. And Paul, at the end of his life, in 2 Timothy 2, verse 8, one of the last things he wrote said, "Remember Jesus Christ, raised from the dead, descended from David. This is my gospel." His message, at the heart of what he had to say, was that Jesus had been raised from the dead. That the gospel, at the very heart of the gospel, at the center of the Christian message, is that Jesus has been raised. And more than that, actually, in the New Testament, the resurrection of Jesus is not just at the heart of what the gospel is. It becomes at the heart of our understanding of who God is. Because there's always two questions with God. One question, which we're used to in the West, is whether there is a God or not. But for most people in human history, the question has not been whether, but which. Which God do you believe in? In India, in China, in Africa, in most of the ancient world, that was the question. Everyone believed in the gods. The question was, which God is it that you are talking about? And the answer in the New Testament, again and again, when we talk about this God, is that this God, the God of Israel, the God that the early Christians proclaimed, is the God who raises the dead. That was his distinguishing mark. That was the feature of this God. That was the way this God declared his hand and showed who he was. 2 Corinthians chapter 1 verse 8, this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. It's as if God came into human history in the resurrection of Jesus and said, do you want to know who I am? Do you want to know what I like, what I'm like? I'm that kind of God. The kind of God who brings life from the dead, who raises his son, and who will redeem those who trust in him. And a massive shaper of what it is to be a Christian is to live day by day with the God who raises the dead. And what he did in the life of Jesus, as we'll think about in week six, he does in our lives today, bringing life from death, bringing hope where there is no hope. The resurrection is at the heart of the Christian message. It's at the heart of our understanding of who God is. But finally, I think the resurrection is at the heart of the Bible's answer to the meaning of life. Life is a confusing thing, and I'm sure already by 12:15 on a Thursday, you've had experience of the confusion and the perplexity of life. Things come and go. Things confuse and perplex us. Patterns emerge and then disappear. Life is a confusing, perplexing thing. But the Bible says that at the heart of the confusion of history, at the heart of what it is to be human in this world, and at the heart of what God is doing about the human project, is the resurrection of Jesus. Now, that's a strange place to put your hopes for understanding the meaning of life. There's so many questions that we'll need to look at in the next few weeks. Did it happen? Week three, we want to think about it and think as impartially and scientifically and historically as we can about the resurrection of Jesus. And to ask that very obvious question, did it happen? Is there good reason to believe in this thing? We need to ask questions about the resurrection of Jesus and our resurrection. What kind of bodies are we talking about here? To what extent is this body raised? Is it a new body? What is the relationship between heaven and earth, between this creation and the new creation? And in all that, we put at the center of our thinking a strange claim. Strange to the Jewish people, strange to the Greeks and the Romans, and strange to us. That a resurrection of a human body happened in history. But I think part of understanding what it is to be Christian and to understand the Christian claims is to let the strange stand at the center and see how it explains the circumference. C.S. Lewis is 50 years since C.S. Lewis died, who wrote the Narnia Chronicles and those many great works of fiction and of apologetics and philosophy and so on. And as C.S. Lewis explained what it was for him to become a Christian, he was an atheist right through his teens and 20s, an atheist as an Oxford Don, right into his 30s when he turned around through a long process to become a Christian. And C.S. Lewis explained that to become a Christian, in his case, at that age and stage of life, he said it wasn't so much that you saw the sun, the S-U-N, the sun, but it was that you saw, he began to see everything by the light of the sun. That through the light of the sun, other things began to make sense. And I think time and time again, for people who become Christians, that is the report of their experience. That there are things at the heart of Christianity that make sense, but more than that, there is the way the rest of the world begins to make sense in the light of the Christian claim. And I want to put to you that the resurrection, if it is not something that you believe or it is something that you're skeptical about, then please come back, and especially in week three as we explore the claim historically and scientifically as best we can. Also consider this, that if the resurrection were true, what sense might it make of the rest of our experience? For example, why do our bodies matter? Why is it that physical life seems so important? Why is it that to be attacked in violence or in other ways feels not only uncomfortable, but in some sense an attack on who you are? Why is sex so more than just a bodily function and something that we agree brings people into relationship and that is a giving of one to another? Or put it the other way, another thing, why has heaven as a concept so struggled to claim our imaginations? I grew up in a Christian home and many times the idea of heaven was commended to me in various ways, and it was commended to me as an endless church service, which wasn't very attractive to an 11-year-old kid, or explained to me as just your most pleasant moment hitting a six at Lord's or whatever, just endlessly repeated. And for some reason, neither of those quite worked in terms of capturing my imagination. But the Bible talks about the resurrection of the dead, about a new heavens and a new earth, about the resurrection of our bodies, about all things being made new in a way that I think is graspable, imaginable and exciting. Why is it that we think the creation is worth preserving? Why do we think that to kill another person is a kind of blasphemy? Why do we think that exhausting the resources of the earth would be a tragedy? Why do we think that justice matters? Why do we have this niggling feeling that those who have done great crimes in this world should be brought to account in the next world? Resurrection, the hope of the resurrection, was born in the soil of the persecution of the Jewish people as they looked for the day when they would be vindicated and when God would turn all things right, when he would bring justice and when he would make all things new. And that's the soil we want to go back into next week as we think about the Old Testament and this growing hope that one day God, the God of justice, the God of creation, would raise the dead. I look forward to sharing this time with you. I think it'll be really exciting. Thanks for your attention.
Well, thank you, Rory. It was great to get a preview of what's coming in the next few weeks and to understand how hope that's strange to us today has always been a strange hope, but gives light to life and many of our questions. So next week we're here in the same place looking at the hope foreshadowed in the Old Testament. See you again then. Rory is able to hang around for a few minutes afterwards, so you can catch him with any questions that you might have. So yeah.